there were people in my life that knew I was gay, but I would, and they would question me, and I would go, "No, I'm not gay."
Would you get vehement? Would you?
Oh,
like,
my God, yeah, I would.
Would you be like, "How dare? Would you?
How
get mad?
Dare you? I'm not gay." And I would go, "You're gay. How about that? How about if I said that to you? You're gay." And it would be, and
that sounds,
I would,
so gay. That
I know, saying. I know it does. And then whenever they would throw that, you know, well, he likes to cook and he likes to clean and. You know, and you mean your husband cooks? And I go, yeah, I cook, okay? Do you have a problem with that? I cook. Some of the greatest chefs are men.
Then again, you could know someone all their life, but might not know their friend unless you see him at night. Call
the Freaks Come Out at Night.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank, episode 147. I already have a title. Closet Case. What's up, everybody? It's a wonderful day. It's been goddamn beautiful in New York. Fucking amazing. It's been like 65 the last 2 days. Everybody's happy and glorious. Now comes the doom. Now comes the bad days. Just when you think there's hope, they take it away from you. The Cowboys won, sending us into the last week of the season to blow it yet again to the last other team in the division, in the conference. 2 years ago, lost last week of the season, would have won the title instead, the Giants. They lost to the Giants. Last year, same thing to the Redskins. This year, will it be the Eagles? Probably. Hi, everybody. How are you? So listen, on this week's episode, it was a cool one. It was a really good one. This guy, Kevin Meaney, who's a comic who I knew from when I was, I think before I even started, he was doing stuff on television that I remember. It's been around forever. He's a guy. I had this theory that I might have told before on this podcast that anyone who looks gay or anyone who looks anorexic, they are those things. People say, like, no, they're just, you know, they're just really thin boned. That's why they look small. No, they're anorexic. You just want to believe that because you don't want to believe that someone you know is anorexic. And when somebody walks and talks super gay, super effeminately, you want to be like, no, you know, they're not gay, but they are. And then later, they usually end up coming out of the closet. But we have one of those cases. This guy came out when he was 50 years old. 50. You know that guy? We're like, well, what about this guy? He's got a kid. This guy with a wife and a kid, he can't be gay. He's got a wife and a kid. Those are two things you can't have when you're gay. But yet there's that theory. There's that theory. If it looks and sounds gay, it's got to be gay. And then boom, the guy comes out of the closet at 50 years old. Kevin Meaney was open and honest. My ideal kind of podcast guest. This will be great. Yeah, I'm stoked on this. I was really happy. We're right to it almost. And then, man, he was just fucking open and clear about it. It's a tough goddamn road. I'll be at the Royal Theater in Toronto for New Year's Eve. 8 p.m. show. Got my website, arithegreat.com, for details. I did fucking 11 spots in the last two nights in New York. Three nights. It'll be 14 in 3 days. I'm getting work. I'm having fun. God damn. Having discussions with David Tell at 2 a.m. about comedic theory. It's pretty great. It's pretty great. If you're a comic, man, it's been pretty fun. It's coming to a close, though. I got about 3 weeks left, and then I'm going back to L.A. I've got Riot L.A. We're doing a storyteller show. This Is Not Happening storyteller show at the Riot Festival. I'll be back on the 9th, back into my old apartment that they still haven't torn down. I'll be leaving this apartment. I got to find a goddamn mover. I got to find a mover and a storage unit. I hate responsibility. All right, you guys, should we start the episode? Oh, no, there was something I want to talk about real quick. A lot of my friends, this goes with the theme of this week's episode. A lot of my friends lately have been having these problems with their jobs. They're not comedians. But even my comedian friends, maybe just me actually, are having these problems where it comes down to, do you want to have more money or do you want to be more fulfilled? And for the longest time, I guess it was just drilled into me at a young age that you got to have a job. That's the most important thing. You got to have money. You got to have a job. But then at some point, you have enough money, and you just got to do what you want to do. I remember Frank Thomas. He was this probably will be Hall of Fame baseball player that played for the Chicago White Sox. It's amazing. I had his rookie card. I was a huge Frank Thomas fan. Huge when I was growing up. I remember there was a game where him and Mike Mussina from the Orioles, Mike Mussina pitched a one-hitter and lost 1-0 on a home run to Frank Thomas. I watched that when I was a bag boy at Woodmont Country Club. Man. And Frank Thomas, he came up for contract negotiations. He was a two-time MVP of the league. Only reached the postseason one time, I think. And they walked him a shitload of times. It's really kind of sad. They walked him like 11 times in like 15 at-bats. Didn't even give him a chance. But he came up for a contract renegotiation, and he just publicly said in the press, he just said, hey, listen, I love being in Chicago. I've been here for 10 years, and I don't want to go anywhere else. My family's here. My friends are here, and I like it. And his agents were like, what the fuck are you doing, bro? Stop that. Don't say that shit. But that was the reality. It's like there's no difference between $14 million and $20 million. The difference is not that great. It's not like the difference between $1 million and $7 million. It's nothing like that. So I have all these friends that are like either aren't happy with their jobs or are getting, you know, better job offers somewhere else. And for a while, it's like, you know, you don't want to be without a job, or it's got to be, well, this one's more money, so obviously take the one for more money. But I just think that it comes down to what does money buy? It buys happiness. So if you can get that on your own, then why would you trade the money for something? Like I saw this interview with Jim Carrey when he was real young on David Letterman, but he was already making it. Let's say it was like in the Mask days or something. Or Dumb and Dumber, one of those days. And he was just talking about how really wealthy he is. He's making funny jokes about it. He wasn't as douchey as I'm making it sound. But, like, I just thought, like, well, yeah, but you're stuck in your mansion with no one to talk to. There's no one around except your close friends. You can't, like, be around people. You can't have the joy of taking the subway and just watching human behavior. I heard later, to prove that he misses that, I heard later after Man on the Moon, he got the guy who put the makeup on him. And he had him put professional Hollywood makeup on, and then he drove a cab around New York, Jim Carrey, just so he could observe humans. He had to go to that length. So at some point, it's like this extra money. All the famous people I know, they've all regretted it. So at some point, this money from your job, I mean, it's like I used to think, you can't get out of a job. But then at some point, just be happy. And if you want to be happy doing fuck all and watching, you know, soap operas all day like I used to do in high school when I didn't have a summer job, then fuck it. Do that. If you have some savings, then go through it. Take 8 months off. Try to write the book you've always wanted to write. You're probably not going to do it. I mean, you're almost definitely not going to do it. But fuck it. Try. Then you can say you tried. Go on a vacation. The Europeans take these long vacations. Take like 3-week vacations, 2-week vacations, month-long vacations sometimes, the Australians. And it's like, why not? You got to live your life. So I say that as I sort of started to become bigger in comedy too for myself. And I get these offers to do things that are like, you know, not exactly what I want to do. Acting roles or comedy type things where it's like, meh, that's not the kind of comedy I want to do. I don't want to have to bury my comedic, I don't know, ideals for the cash. And then at some point you realize you just don't do it. Just be happy. If you can make a passable amount of money, I mean, I don't have big expenses. Two rents, that certainly is one. But I don't have any heirs. I don't have any kids to fucking take care of. So you guys, I'm just advising you all. For Kevin Meaney's sake, for this guy who spent fucking his entire life being worried about what other people thought instead of just being happy. Till 50 years old, until he came out of the closet. 50. He had a fucking kid and a wife. Just trying to cover up the truth because he's afraid of what people think. Who gives a shit what people think? Just find what you want and be happy. You'll regret it later otherwise, so just fucking go for it. You'll figure shit out. Life goes on. Life moves on. You'll be happy. Have that abortion. Have that abortion you've always wanted to have. Protect your happiness. Right now, what makes me happy is I'm about to eat all these goddamn leftover Canadian candies, Reese's Crunchy, Reese's Croquant, peanut butter cups. Yeah, crunchy peanut butter and a Reese's. What? Yeah, they might have done it in a test market here, but never full time like it did in Canada. And I'm going to eat that. And I'm going to let my teeth rot away. I have a dentist appointment tomorrow for the first time in, I think, 10 years. I'm probably going to get about 9 fillings. Yeah, I'm not happy about that. I might have teeth aids. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, let's just start the episode. Episode 147. It was a really good one. I'm really happy with this one. Thank you, Kevin Meaney, for being so fucking cool. Ladies and gentlemen, episode 147 of Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank Closet Case with Mr. Kevin Meaney. Here we go.
And I can't change.
I was gay, I would think hip-hop hates me. Have you read the YouTube comments lately? Man, that's gay, gets dropped on the daily. We become so numb to what we're saying. A culture founded from oppression. Yeah, we don't have acceptance for them. Call each other faggots behind the keys of a message board. A word rooted in hate, yet our genre still ignores it. Gay is synonymous with the lesser. It's the same hate that's caused wars from religion. Gender, the skin color, the complexion of your pigment. The same fight that led people to walkouts and sit-ins. It's human rights for everybody. There is no difference. Live on and be yourself. When I was at church, they taught me something else. If you preach hate at the service, those words aren't anointed. That holy water that you soak in has been poisoned. When everyone else is more comfortable remaining voiceless rather than fighting for humans that have had their rights stolen. I might not be the same, but that's not important. No freedom till we're equal. Damn right I support it.
I'll do introductions later, but it's nice to talk to you. Thanks for having me in your home.
Well, thank you for letting me do your podcast.
Yeah, I'm super interested in weird moments of life.
Okay.
I like people in your neighborhood kind of stuff. And when your stand-up lately has been dealing a lot with... I usually beat around the bush for a while before getting to it, but I have to say it. It's been dealing with you coming out of the closet.
Right.
Which I love. I love super referential personal stand-up. But I'm amazed by guys that didn't come out by college or 23, 24 years old.
Well, you know, it was just a different time to come out back when I was coming of age in the 1970s.
But that was here in New York, right?
Here in New York. But I lived in Westchester County. So it was I was isolated from the city. I wasn't part of a New York City scene. I was part of just a regular guys group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just all, you know, guys hanging out. And
what, like your friends from high school?
My friends from high school, my friends from college. You know, there was no one person that was gay that I could look up to.
Nobody. That's how I had it too. I don't know if you were religious. I went to Jewish school and it was just like...
I went to Catholic school. So I went to Catholic school till fourth grade. Yeah. And then I was moved to public school because the Catholic school believed that I needed more freedom because they couldn't handle me. I was an ADD type kid, you know. I couldn't sit still, and they called it hyperactive back then. So it was just so they didn't want to deal with me. So they put
shipped
me
you
in,
off.
In Catholic school. They put me in public school.
And in my fourth grade?
And I went in fifth grade, I began public school.
They didn't... Okay, this is pretty gay and stuff, but like, they didn't want to just work it out with you?
What, the Catholic school?
Yeah.
No, they absolutely not. No, they didn't want to do it. And to be honest with you, the public school didn't want to deal with it either.
Yeah.
So the public school kind of just let me be on my own. I have no idea. My brother Jack says he has no idea how I graduated from high school. And he would just look at me and go, I can't believe he doesn't do any of the work. I would do nothing, absolutely nothing. I would just watch television.
Yeah, that's how it was
I would
too.
Do no homework.
What'd you do just in school? Would you do it in class, like do your homework for the next class?
I don't know how I got through. I have no idea. And if there was one thing, like if I would get if something would interest me,
yeah,
I would look at it and study it and absorb it and then really do well on the test. But mostly,
yeah, anything, if it interested you,
anything that I wasn't interested in, I would just like make it up and I would be, it would be fun.
Yeah, but you're like a smart guy.
I remember taking the standardized test.
Yeah.
That everybody
SATs
or whatever it was, and I just filled them all in, and I laughed through the whole thing, not reading one question, just laughing, going, I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm crazy. I just look at this design I'm doing, and then I handed it in. And then, I forgot about it. I didn't hear anything about it. And then the next thing you know, they have to bring my mother and father in to discuss my standardized test because they think that I might have retardation problems.
They didn't assume maybe this guy just doesn't care. No. He's just guessing.
Nope. They just said, they just went right to that, that there's something obviously wrong with him.
When was this? What year around was this?
Oh, this is in the
70s. 70s. Okay. Yeah.
And at that time, I was working full-time as a pot washer at a country club.
As a what?
As a pot washer. I was the head pot washer at a country club. I was in the pot washers union.
What is that?
A pot washer is somebody who washes the pots the chef.
Oh.
So I was in a kitchen, this great kitchen that, that they were doing all these parties and... And the members, they had a membership there, but then they would bring in, you know, Christmas parties and golf outings and things like that all year round. And I was 14, and I got hired as the head pot washer.
There was a pot washers union?
Yes, there was.
Why?
It was part of the dishwashers union.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So it was a pot washers union. It was a dish... I don't know if it was the dishwashers or pot washers, but I was part of the pot washers.
Yeah.
I was, and I was very happy with my...
How much did that pay? Minimum?
Minimum, but there was a lot of work, so I was making a lot of money.
Yeah, as a 14-year-old, though, minimum wage is amazing.
It was like, I don't know, it was $1.75 an hour?
Whoa.
Maybe $1.25 an hour back then?
Oh. That's a lot less than when I was minimum waging.
Well,
it was like $6.50.
No, this is like in 1972. $1.75. Yeah, 1972, maybe even 1970, I was 14, maybe.
The minimum wage in this country is ridiculous. What they say, this is the minimum wage you can earn, is ridiculous.
I don't know how people do it, but, you know, you can do it. You know, there are things that, you know, people go, well, you know, in the poor neighborhoods, you can't buy, that's all you're offered are, like, fast food and things like that. Mm-hmm. There are things that you can buy.
Groceries.
And groceries, just you go, you know, I mean, because I'm a big, you know, I'm really big in on food now and working on my weight and my health and everything. So that's a big part of what I've been doing the last few years.
Your health and stuff. Yeah, I try to go to Whole Foods once in a while. Get a salad.
Yeah.
Something like good.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I just got back from Switzerland and it's nonstop cheese.
Are you bound up?
I feel a little bit like that.
Yeah. Bound up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of all came out yesterday, but like, yeah. It was weird how much worse you feel when you eat shitty and how much better you feel when
you
don't.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to eat well to, you know, to get the energy from the food, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I used to be a food comfort guy, like that guy Fierro, you know, the big fat fuck.
Yeah.
All these big fat people on TV, you know, like Paula Deen, she was serving us up all this stuff that's good. You love it. You love fried chicken. You love gravy and butter and stuff. But what does it do to you after you eat it? What do you want to do after you eat that? You take a nap.
So your body just shuts down and says, I can't deal with this.
You know, like anything like that.
Are you gluten-free?
You want to take a nap. You want to go to sleep, you know. And I don't eat like that anymore. I eat food and I'm energized and I want to go take a walk.
Yeah, but what do you do for comfort food? Do you, like, cheat at all? I remember the old food pyramid used to be the top of the food pyramid was like a chocolate sundae.
Well, I'll have ice cream and things like that, sure.
Yeah.
You're not eating. I mean, last night I ate a lot of ice cream. I did. And then I passed out from sugar shock. I did. So, that happens.
That's fun.
You know, you just like, you know, that is one of my weaknesses is before I go to bed, I have to have something sweet. So, you know, in this apartment, there's nothing to tempt me. you know, that's bare bones stuff here. But when I was at my daughter's and ex-wife's last night, they have, you know, there's Oreos and they have M&Ms and they have ice cream and they have.
How can you not eat all that?
So, you know, you look in there, you say, I'll just have a little bit. And then the next thing you know, you're just you're shaking in on the couch. You know, I won't sleep in the ex-marital bed.
You won't?
No.
How long did you leave that?
It's been 7 years since I've been divorced. Yes.
Wait, why won't you sleep in the ex-marital bed? Move the mic in front of you. It's
because I won't. I won't eat. I won't eat. I won't. That's her bed. Even though that's her room.
Yeah, but okay. But hold on.
And she's not there. She's away in L.A. for a couple of days. I'm taking care of Kate. At their apartment.
What do you do? Sleep on the couch then?
I'll sleep on the couch.
Why? Do you feel it's disrespectful to the... Because Fitzsimmons stayed at my place and he slept in my bed. Like it wasn't a big deal.
Okay. Well...
So, I mean, it's not just... That's not your place, right?
I don't want to sleep in her bed. I really don't. You know? And I'd rather sleep in the... I'm very comfortable on the couch. Like, I'm a couch guy.
Yeah.
Like, I can do the couch. It's not a problem. You know?
Why not? Why? Like, what's the reason, though, for not sleeping in the bed? Is it just uncomfortable?
No, it's a very comfortable bed.
No, I mean the idea of sleeping in her bed?
I don't know. It's just, you know.
Yeah. How old's your kid?
I don't know.
How old's your kid? That's your great answer. I don't know, something. More than two.
She's 14 and just, you know, the best kid in the world and the worst kid in the world. All
really?
Of them, you know? I don't want to talk to you. Like, this morning was a struggle.
Just a
bitch
sometimes.
You know, you're just annoying. And I said, well, I'm going to walk you to school. I don't want you to walk me to school. Ugh. I can walk to school on my own. You don't need to walk me to school. Okay? I can do it on my own. All right?
And you're like, I know. God! I feel like I help going to school with you.
And I go, well, I'm going to get the subway there. And why don't you take the other subway? Why don't you take the one? Why do you have to take the B? I go, well, that's closer to my...
And what's the difference? Of course, it's supposed to go together. We're two people.
You know, and so she didn't... So I said, well, you know, it's 10 after. You're going to be late. I'm not going to be late.
Oh.
And I go, all right, goodbye. And I just left her. And she could just, walk out of her apartment. Walk out
Scenes like that should be shown when people are considering having a child.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind, you know, it's, and then I said, okay, I'm going to, you know, I had made her breakfast, I had gotten her up, and, you know, because kids, they can't get up on their own because they're sleeping, you know, and kids, even if they had an alarm right next to them, and it's like, bomp, bomp, bomp,
sleep right
and an alarm is like, you know, like even like a smoke alarm is above them.
Yeah.
And it's going off full blast. They won't hear it.
Yeah.
They will not hear it because they're kids. And
it defies logic.
It does. And it's like, you know, some people can't understand that. But you have to remember, when you were a kid, you couldn't get up because you're growing. So while you sleep, you grow. And you're in this, like, this whole, you know, you can get up because you're full grown now.
Right.
But when you're 14 years old, you're still developing. You're still growing. And noises aren't going to wake you up. It's not. You could be screaming over her. And any kid, you know, maybe...
Then how come when a baby's around, if you drop a pin on the ground, they'll wake up?
That's not true. The baby gets up because the baby needs something, you know?
Well, parents are always like, shh, you got to be quiet. The baby's sleeping.
No, that's a stupid parent. You know?
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
The baby's not going to wake up. Baby is not going to wake up if the baby wants to sleep. You know?
Okay. So you
know, look at babies that are, you know, strolling around the city.
Yeah, dead asleep.
And they're dead asleep, and they're sound asleep, you know? Don't do that. The baby, the baby's not going to wake up, okay?
Yeah.
And then these babies that are pushed around in those oxygen tents, you ever see them?
Fully enclosed?
Yeah, you know, they have the plastic all around them. You just want to rip the plastic off them, you know? The baby's suffocating. Let the baby breathe.
Yeah, we definitely didn't have those.
No.
I wonder, though, if they're going to die in the elements.
Yeah.
Ew, if I had a baby in New York City, I would want to keep it completely enclosed.
No,
I wouldn't want some homeless guy walking by.
Yeah. Oh, they're fine. You know, it's the greatest place to have a baby.
In New York?
Yes, in New York and any city.
Why? You get over it?
It's great to have a baby in the city, you know? It's where babies should be.
Dude, I saw some, like, six-year-old at that park near 4th Street. What's that called? Washington Square Park.
Right.
And they were just in that fountain, and they were just on the ground picking stuff up. And their parents were like, you don't touch ground things. And it was just disgusting. They don't care at all. They won't even wash their hands. Ugh.
Yeah.
How many kids you got?
Just one.
Oh, that's the last thing in the world I want to do.
And that's enough. One is enough. One child is enough. I can't see having any more children.
Yeah.
Well, so, I'm not now. I'm 57 now. I'm certainly not going to have any more
children. You had one at 43.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably right around the end, right?
Right around the end?
The end of when people, like, can do it. I know guys can do it later, but, like, when they legitimately can do it.
Well, a man can have a child all the way up until, you know, you
Yeah,
die.
But none of them do, you know, except the super rich, like CEOs of companies.
You know, but I wouldn't do that for the, you know, the kids' sake, you know. But now, you know, but women can have kids up until they're 50, you know.
Really?
Sure.
I remember, you know, the risk was always, like, retardation.
It's a high-risk pregnancy. Anything over, like, 35 now.
Yeah.
So if a woman is 35... And over, it's high risk.
You can find out, though, can't you, early on, when you can still get rid of it?
Yeah, you can find out if the baby has Down syndrome or...
let's not do this. Let's just not.
And then you abort the baby, if you want. My or you can have the baby.
She had some disease where it was like 25% chance that the baby comes out Downsy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, please tell me you're going to get rid of it if it found out. She's like, fuck yeah. And I was like, okay, thank God. Don't be one of those, like...
But,
Jesus,
you know,
people.
They find out if the baby has Down syndrome or has, you know, whatever, problems that it could have. But they don't want to know the sex.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
You know, you want to know, you know, why don't you not know if the baby has Down syndrome? Why don't you, you know, think, oh, my God, what a surprise. Oh, my God, our baby has Down syndrome. Get Down syndrome. Get Down syndrome. That's terrible.
Yeah, they always say you want to be a surprise. I'm like, how about the surprise come right now at the doctor's office?
Yeah.
But, like, why did you have to...
We named Kate, you know, like she was... we knew she was a girl, like, you know, I don't know, as soon as we knew. And we said, oh, let's... we named her Kate.
Let's think about her name.
And then it was like she was... we knew her really well when she was born. It was weird.
Why?
Because we had named her, three or four months before she was born. So, you know, you were kind of talking to her. Well, the stomach was getting bigger and, you know, you had a relationship with her. That's what we felt.
Wait, you for real felt that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Like you sort of, wow. Because you were referencing her.
Yes. Because when she was born, Kate was born. You know, yeah. It wasn't, okay, we're going to name... it now, or we're going to name her now, or we're going to, you know, our baby was born and we haven't decided on a name yet. We had already had the name, and the baby's room, Kate's room, was already done up, and I had decorated it. And
could you picture when she was like, I don't know if you remember this, but when she was still in your wife's belly, could you picture like her as a child, Kate? When you say Kate's coming?
Kate, yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you know, because Marianne was working and I was at home. You know, decorating the house and getting a room all together and going out and buying things and just it was wonderful. It was and people wanted to come in to photograph it because it was, you know, the baby's room. You know, it was great.
Yeah,
they had done a beautiful job.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice. Was that your first clue, or did you already know?
No, I knew I was gay. You know,
so what'd you do? You just then you
kid.
Just you just buried it.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting because it all comes full circle. You know when you're gay. You ask any gay
guy. As soon as you get sexuality, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know that you're different from the other boys, you know, because... So I knew that, but once I would try, you know, to, you know, talk about that with any other friends that I thought might be like me, like-minded, that was already, you know, it was like, you know, pushed to the side. Oh, no, I was just kidding. That was just...
That's what you would do.
Yeah, you know, so then I said, well, you know, I can't talk about this with anybody, you know, and I'll just have to keep it secret. And I did. And I kept it...
No, from what age till...
Oh, from when I was, like, probably 14 or 15, probably maybe even earlier than that, all the way up until... I came out. But I
and
I,
you still tried over and over again, or you just that one time and then stopped?
I had tried over and over and over and over again, and every time that I would try,
you buked.
Yeah, and so it was like, you know, I just kept striking out over and over again.
Fuck.
And so it was a miserable life. So I said, okay, I'm not gonna. I have to get a girlfriend. I have, you know, that's my problem. I'm not having enough sex, and I have to get a girlfriend. And I would try with every girl, and then they would end up being crazy. They'd go, well, what happened to that girl that you liked, the one that liked to smell books? She was really nice, and you liked her, and she was wonderful. And I go, well, she was crazy.
Oh, yeah,
she
guys will crazy, accept that really easily.
You know? And they go, yeah, oh, yeah, let me tell you what she did. She was nuts. So everybody was nuts. It was always them. It was never me. And then I, you know...
Would you have sex with these girls?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And then I didn't want to have sex with them. You know, like after, you know, the first date, I always want... They're the one we're going to get married. They're the one. Because I always, you know, I wanted to fall in love. I wanted to have what everybody else had.
Yeah.
But I didn't have it.
The picket fence kind of light life.
Yes. Okay. I wanted to fall in love, and I wanted to be normal, and I wanted to have the same life everybody else had. And they were married, and they had good jobs, mm-hmm. and they had a house, and they hung out, and it was fun. It was a great life. I saw my brothers. I saw my sister. I saw my friends from high school and college.
And you didn't see any of their pain. You only saw their good stuff.
Only the good stuff.
Right.
I was like, why can't I have that? Why can't I have it? And I was nearing 40 years old, okay. and I didn't have it, and I had a great career. I had a house. I had a car.
You've had a great career, right?
Yeah.
I remember you from...
But, you know, from when I was like 39, I was like at the top. I was at the top of my game, and I had everything. And I was doing really well, you know, but I was miserable because I didn't have the life everybody else had, you know. So then I go to Vegas with a bunch of friends, and I end up getting married to this girl I didn't know in Vegas just one night like that. I said, well, I'm just going to marry her, you know. And part of it was, if I don't get married before I'm 40, everybody's going to think I'm gay. And I was just that thing in my head, I'm going to be outed. I know I'm going to be outed. They're going to get me. I know they're going to get me. So I said, I'm going to get married. And it was like, so I married this woman I didn't even know at a drive-up.
Miriam? Is that her?
No.
Oh, okay.
Her name was...
Okay. I was going to say, you stuck with her?
What was her name? No, that's okay. Marianne. That's my real wife. But I married this girl.
Yeah?
And
where was she from? How'd you meet her?
She's from L.A.
You just met her at a bar?
I had met her before. She had gone out with a good friend of mine. And I had met her a couple of times at a party, and we had fun that night. And I was I was suffering from depression. I was drinking.
Yeah.
You know, I was having a great time. And I said, let's just get married. You and I will get married. And we'll just start our life together.
She was into it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. How old was she?
She was probably 10 years younger than me.
Okay.
You know, so she was maybe...
29, 30?
Maybe she was in her 30s, and I was 39.
Yeah.
You know, we get married. The next day, I wake up, and I go, what am I doing? she goes, good morning. Morning. This is so wonderful. And I was like, oh, God, what did I do? Why did I do this? You know, so then I had to get out of it, you know. Which I did. But what the point I was trying to make is, so I did that, and then I wrote this show about it, about getting married in Vegas, and the whole show was like a coming out. It was like it was so gay, the show I had written about, you know, why I got married.
Music?
There was music in it. And,
nice.
And I was telling everybody about how lonely I was, and now I wasn't lonely, but she wasn't the right one. She was in my picture, and so...
Still closeted, though.
The show, the reason why the show wasn't successful, because it was successful all the way up until I said goodnight. All the way until I revealed what was the reason why I did this. And the reason was...
Wait, yeah. You
know, the reason why I did this, got married in Vegas, is because I'm crazy.
Aww.
And everybody's sitting on the edge of their seats going, because he's gay, he's gay, he's gay. But I didn't say it. And then a cage comes down from the rafters, and I'm behind the cage. I'm a crazy man. And then that's curtain. And then that was the end of the show. And it was like,
So everyone saw you being honest, and then all of a sudden it's like, no, what?
Then he wasn't
hiding this
anymore.
Last part?
Yeah. So after that, I I remember going back to L.A. because I had done it at the Hasty Pudding Theater in Cambridge at Harvard University.
Okay.
And I had run the whole summer. And it was a good show, but the ending was pathetic, you know. It needed to be reworked. And so I get back to L.A., and I have, like, this huge breakdown, right? Nervous breakdown. I go to the doctor, and the doctor says, how are you doing?
Yeah.
And I said, I'm not doing good. And I just started crying, weeping, crying, like I couldn't control myself. And I was, and he said, okay, all right, I'm going to put you on, you know, these antidepressants. So, and I'm going to send you to this guy, Scott. He's a psychologist, and you can talk to him.
The doctor was a regular
GP.
Doctor?
He was like my, you know, okay. The guy that would help me, you know, like you go in for a cold or your physical. Yeah. Dr. Gerard.
He put you on antidepressants?
Yeah, put me on antidepressants like that. Weird. Like in a second. And I got on them, and I was on them for 16 years, and I just got them off them last year. These pills.
Yeah.
Also, what they did for me was they lifted me out of the depression.
Which ones? What were you on?
I was on Paxil.
I tried that.
But they lifted me out of that moment that I was in where I was weeping uncontrollably, which I had been for weeks prior to that. I would have to pull over to the side of the road and I would just start crying. I would get a standing ovation on stage and I would be like, you know,
crying that night.
You know, and then go up to my room and just start weeping, crying.
Depression is crazy. It's like, what it does to you.
It's so unbelievable.
No one gets it.
And I would be out and I would have to do a local television show and I'd be weeping, crying in my hotel room. And then I would go downstairs and, hey, how you doing, everybody? Great to be here. So anyway, I don't care. Meow, meow, meow. That's not right, you know, and do all my stuff. And they were great, and I would go back, and I would be miserable again. So then I got on the pills, and it lifted me out of this thing. But now there's no exit strategy. So I know that I have to be on them in order. I don't want to go back to there.
Yeah.
But what they also do to me, they also suppress the gay.
They suppress the sexual desire.
Sexual desire. Yeah. Any sexual desire.
Yeah, my girlfriend, it wasn't me. My girlfriend was on them. She could never come. She never wanted to have sex.
So I was like, okay, that's fine. You know?
Yeah.
I'm happy this way.
That's why people go into the priesthood.
So
it's like, how can I bury this in a legitimate way?
So I end up going, I still want a family and I still want everything that everybody else has, but I'm happy the way I am.
Right.
So I go back with Marianne. I had broken up with her a year before. And I love Marianne. I still love her today. She is the greatest. There's no...
Wait, you were...
She's the tuning fork of my life.
You had gone out with her before, broken up.
Yes. Broke up with her. And then I got married to the girl I got married to in Vegas.
Yeah.
And then Marianne had come to see that show. Her and I, when we went out together, we were together. I mean, we were meant for each other.
Really?
She was like... She's a very... She's beautiful, cute, masculine, and in a way that was pleasing to me, but she was also she could be very much a lady.
Mm-hmm.
She could be, but she was also...
Is she gay at all?
No, she's not gay. But she can appear gay sometimes, you know? She can, you know, people might say, God, she works really hard. Is she a lesbian? Physically, she can transform herself into, because she's so driven and so smart and so determined that she has to get things done, that she appears to be, you know, not normal, a person, you know. She's a lesbian. She's a serious lesbian, you know. No sexual desires at all. She's Chris Matthews, hardball, going to do things right. There's a right way and a wrong way. We're going to do it the right way. But then all of a sudden, she can be this wonderful lady and compassionate and funny and smart. Nobody's smarter.
And you were into her.
And I was totally into her, you know. And now that I'm on this Paxil, I'm not... It's not a sexual thing anymore.
Wait, because you had the excuse, like, I can't have sex because Paxil won't let me?
No, I would still have sex, but that wasn't an important part of our relationship.
Because libido goes down. It's not just the ability, it's the desire.
It's like, you know, and then I would think, I would be in my head where I better have sex with her, because she's going to think that I'm gay if I don't have sex. You know, it was like this fucking thing that was constantly in my head that I was, you know, I was going to, I always thought I was going to be outed. I always thought there's always somebody that will say, you know, like at our wedding.
Yeah.
Well, the next day, the breakfast, we go around, we greet everybody that came to our, the breakfast the day after the wedding. Yeah. Those people had to stay overnight and we would greet all the tables and we went up to this one table and Harry said to me, Harry Krabula, who went to high school with, and he goes, "Wow, I thought you were gay." And I go, "I'm not gay. I'm not a Harry." All right, but he knew. He knew.
Was he gay?
No, he didn't. But he wasn't gay. But there are people, and it would piss me off.
If you have enough gay friends, you just know. You're like,
but there are people
clearly
that can look right through you, and they know exactly what you're thinking. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I'm saying there were people in my life that knew I was gay. But I would, and they would question me, and I would go, "No, I'm not gay."
Would you get vehement? Would you?
Oh,
like,
my God, yeah, I would.
Would you be like, "How dare? Would you?
How
get mad?
Dare you? I'm not gay." And I would go, "You're gay. How about that? How about if I said that to you? You're gay." And it would be, and
that
I would,
so gay. That
I know,
saying.
I know it does. And then whenever they would throw that, you know, well, he likes to cook and he likes to clean and. You know, and you mean your husband cooks? And I go, "Yeah, I cook, okay? Do you have a problem with that? I cook. Some of the greatest chefs are men." You know, and I was like, I was so gay, but I could never admit it, you know? Yeah. And I always thought I was going to be outed. Always.
Now, did any party? Man, I got to pee real quick.
Yeah.
But I want, okay. All right, we're going to come back. I'm just going to pause real quick.
Okay.
Well, here's what I want to ask. But did any part of you, were you hoping at all, like, maybe I'm not gay? Maybe,
oh, no.
Maybe I'm straight?
No.
None of you?
No.
You knew?
Oh, God, I knew. You know? But I was never going to come out. Ever. You know, I was never going to. And I had a few experiences, but the Paxil, I was fine. Didn't really need to.
Okay, I want to talk about the experiences. Yeah. Hold on a second.
My God. Well.
Thanks. Because I know a lot of guys that were closeted that were sort of trying to, like, really trying to convince themselves. And I always wondered when guys would come up to them and just assume, like, "Well, you're gay, right?" And
then, yeah.
That how could they never, when enough people said, "Well, you're gay, right?" How could you not?
No, I never hung around with any. Other, I didn't know any other gay people, really. You know?
Oh, really?
I didn't. You know, I was isolated now out in L.A. And all my friends.
It's Mecca. West Hollywood,
yeah, I know,
is Mecca.
But I lived in Toluca Lake. Oh. I lived in Toluca Lake, and I lived in a little community, and I had neighbors, and I had my friends, mostly from New York, that would come over that I knew.
Did you go on the road ever?
I would go on the road all the time.
Now,
I lived on the road.
When you went on the road, were you?
Rarely. You know, sometimes it would happen. I would always fantasize about it, but
about dudes.
Oh yeah.
And then you would? Would you go to gay bars?
No, never go to a gay bar ever.
I love those guys.
You know,
I can see it sometimes. Like, "Oh, this is a gay bar? I didn't even know." And then
that's the way I would always end up. You know, but I always thought that I was going to get caught. You know, somehow. You know, and so you know, just like get caught, just in my thought. You know, it wouldn't be necessarily getting caught in a act.
Yeah.
You know, where I would be spotted at a gay bar or somebody saw me making out with somebody or somebody saw me having sex or, you know, or in a bathroom. It was never that. It was always in my mind. So now cut to.
What do you mean in your mind?
That somebody was going to know that I was gay. They would find out I was gay. You know, they would find out and they would tell the world that I was on a phone sex line or something like that, or I bought pornography.
Would you do that sometimes?
Oh, I would buy you know, men's magazines all the time.
Okay.
You know, and then you know what I would do? I would buy them, and then I go, I'd have to get rid of them, right? because I couldn't put them in my own garbage.
This is
before the internet, you know. So
you can put them in your garbage.
So I couldn't put them in my garbage because somebody would go through my garbage and go, "You've got gay magazines in your garbage. You're a homo." So I would never do that. I would put them in the car, and then when nobody was behind me, I would throw them out the window, right?
What?
And there would be penises scattered all behind me on the road. And I'd be going, "God, what am I doing? I'm throwing dirty magazines out the window, and I'm going to be stopped by the police, and they're going to ask me what I did. Why do I have cocks on the on the road. And I go, I officer, I got in the car and they were, I didn't notice they were right next to me, and I go, my God, they're dirty and bad, and I threw them out the window, and I was gonna go to the gas station to wash my hands. And I already had that all planned. The excuse.
Did you ever get worn out from all this?
The fucking effort is horrible. So now I get arrested in San Francisco.
Wait.
No, hold on. I Marianne and I and Kate were. Kate is 2 years old. I was in San Francisco 6 months after 9/11. Marianne and I, we go through security. I'm with Ronnie Schell, Carl Ballantyne, Merv Griffin.
You're with Merv Griffin?
Brett Butler, all these wonderful acts. And we do this show up in San Francisco State University to benefit the theater department up there. Ronnie Schell had asked me to do the benefit with him. He had gotten all this.
Did any of you go, I can't do a theater benefit? I just can't be associated with a theater? Or was that okay?
No, we'd absolutely do it. Yeah, why wouldn't we do that?
Because theater is often like a gay...
No, well, no, that has nothing to do with I would support any cause like that, but okay. I would never get in, you know, wouldn't be, you know, I wasn't gay, you know,
right.
So I was married. So who cares? I was married, right. I had a child, you know,
okay.
I'm living the life. So,
and Merv Griffin is super Christian. Merv Griffin is super, like, he represents straight Christian values, right?
Merv Griffin is the biggest homo in the world. Okay.
Really?
Oh my God, Merv Griffin was so gay.
What?
Oh my God.
Wow. What?
Merv Griffin is the gayest man ever. He was like a closeted gay,
and he was the same thing.
He never came out. He would never admit it, but it's known widely through Hollywood and now the world that, you know, he was gay, and he had children, and he was always out with Zsa Zsa or Ava Gabor, and you know, why don't you marry me, Merv? No, I can't marry you, you know. We'll just be friends.
I'm a ladies' man. I can't be tied down.
He was always out, you know, with the most beautiful women, and he was like one of the greatest talk show hosts.
Yeah, so is Perez Hilton.
Ever, you know, great personality. We loved him. We still benefit from what he's given us, you know, with his resorts and Jeopardy.
Oh, yeah.
Wheel of Fortune.
Merv Griffin was Jeopardy.
Yeah.
Those are the two, Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy, two good ones that'll last forever.
Right. So we did this benefit, and then the next day we had to fly back, and that's when I was arrested at the airport.
For what?
For filming Marianne getting searched at security. Kate and I had cleared through
security. They arrested you.
They arrested me.
The gall.
Yes.
You're allowed to film them. You're absolutely allowed to film public officials in their duty. You're absolutely allowed.
That was so.
This is right after 9/11. All right.
So it was right after 9/11. The
filming. Who cares? You're not doing anything wrong.
The National Guardsman comes up to me and says, "Are you filming?" I said, "I'm not filming." I lied to him immediately. I said, "I'm with my daughter," and I was filming Marianne being searched because I had to show the family about what a lunatic she was when we traveled. I wanted to show.
Why?
What
did she do?
Because she's standing there like this, and they're guanding her. And
angry that as a free American, she has to be stopped and searched without reason.
Right.
Fair enough.
Absolutely.
Fair enough, Marianne.
It was her own problem because she wore every bit of metal that she could possibly have.
Yeah.
You know, and she knows better because she's a world traveler. So.
No, not knows better. Fuck them. She's allowed to wear metal.
Well, whatever.
All right.
She was. So they detained me for a minute, and Kate is 2 years old. She runs towards the exit, right?
Yeah.
And she's a two-year-old, and she has no ID on her or anything. Anybody could pick her up, and you don't need ID for a baby to travel anywhere. You can just pick up the baby and say, "That's my. She's a lab child, and I'm taking her."
Right.
You know, and she could be kidnapped like that. You know. So I said to the guardsman, I said, "I have to get my baby." "You're going nowhere. You're being detained." She's getting further away.
They told you you're being detained.
Yeah. I said, "I have to get her. She's my child."
Yeah.
"You're going nowhere." And at that moment, I went left, right, left, right, left, right. Got around him, grabbed her, came back to where we were being detained. That's when he trains the gun on me and her. Right?
And the two-year-old kid in you?
And I go, "Get that gun away from us. What are you, crazy?" Next thing you know, I'm in jail. And
Marianne's okay.
And
she's
Marianne
got the kid.
And Kate, they go off, and then 10 hours later, I get out of jail. They bail me out, and we're back in L.A. Now I have to go up to San Francisco to find a lawyer.
Yeah.
What am I worried about when I'm going up to the lawyer? Because the lawyer wants to give me a lie detector's test. What am I worried about?
He's going to ask you if you're straight or gay.
Yes. Why would they ask me if I'm straight or gay?
Would never even come up.
Would never come up. But that's in my head.
Because you're so worried about the secret at all times.
My secret, it's ever present.
And if they do ask you, you're fucked.
I'm fucked because now I've got a fucking lie detector test on me. And they're going to go, you're gay and we knew it. We knew you were gay.
For reporting it to the gay police.
And I'm freaking out. You know, I'm driving up because I can't fly up to San Francisco. I have to.
Why?
Because I can't fly because I was just arrested at the airport.
So they wouldn't let you fly?
Well, they would let me fly, but the lawyer said it's better that you drive, you know, because we don't want you to see you at the airport and all that, you know. So just drive up here. And I said, okay, I'll drive up. And you're going to take the lie detector test. And we don't even have to show it to the DA. You know, if it doesn't come out well, this is just between you and I. And we're just going to see how this lie detector works out. And it's just going to be a tool that we might be able to use. Okay, they're going to do the lie detector test. But they're going to ask me if I'm gay. I know they're going to ask me. So when they did that lie detector
test. You can't tell your lawyer, like, they're not going to do this, right? You have to, like.
I have to do the lie detector test. And I'm going, well, you know, I'm just going to go up to, hey, how you doing, guys? Yeah, all right. You know?
Smoke a cigar on the way in.
I'm smoking. Yeah, I'm a wreck, you know. But anyway, my wife and.
And so forth.
Yeah, I love my wife. Boy, I tell you, I love, nice chicks up here. Huh?
I love pounding puss, huh? Yeah,
so, so they ask me all the questions, and the guy looks at the lie detector's test and says, you know, I've never seen a lie detector test like this before in my life, ever in my life. You are off the charts, you know.
Nervous. But,
you know, you are just, it's like every question is a 10, you know, 1 to 10, I'm a 10. Boom, zing, you know, everything is, I'm so wound up.
Because you're so worried.
I'm so worried and so wound up that the lie detector proves that I'm not lying. I didn't, you know.
Like, why are you nervous when we asked your name?
But everything yeah. is just like, you know, to the 10th power.
What's your name? Kevin Meenia. I love puss.
Basically, that's what it is. You know, so eventually I did get off this this charge that was now.
What was the charge? What was the charge?
They never charged me officially. They arrested
me. Just detained you without reason or charge.
They arrested me, and any potential charges that they were going to bring against me were never brought up. So the
just
DA
a threat of charges.
The DA just dropped it. The next thing you know, I'm on O'Reilly.
What?
I'm on the O'Reilly Factor.
Talking about this?
Yeah, talking about this. And I was on the Brian Williams news broadcast.
Are those online anywhere?
I don't know. I don't know if they are or not.
I'll look for them.
But so I talked to them, and Bill O'Reilly says, I would have done the same thing with my kid. And Brian Williams, he was wonderful. You know, he's such a great guy. This is before he took over Nightly News.
Okay.
He was still on MSNBC. You know, he's doing his show on MSNBC.
Which is Brian Williams, the white-haired guy?
He's the anchorman for NBC News. Yeah, you know, he took over Tom anymore. Brokaw's job.
Okay.
You know? So he's been the anchorman for, you know, almost 20 years now.
Jesus, good
job. I don't think that long. But he's been the anchorman for at least 14
years. And you got interviewed
years.
By both of them about it.
So I interviewed with both of them about my arrest at the airport. And, you know, and then I was like, oh, thank God they didn't bring up the gay. And now I'm safe again. And nobody's going to ask me that question. So, you know, then you move on. You know, I wasn't caught.
Right back to the closet.
Yeah, right. You know, but I was in the closet. Nobody knew, you know, so.
Man, God, that must have worn on you.
That your whole life it wears on you. I remember doing the Howard Stern show before.
Oh, that must have been fear.
Before, this was back in the early 80s, and he would always ask, a big fan of Howard, loved him, you know, but he would always ask somebody if they were gay or not, you know. Are you gay? Do you ever have a gay experience? Or
any hint he got, he would go
for
it.
Yeah, he would go for it, you know.
So did you get worried?
And so now I'm doing an interview. I was down in Atlanta. I was working the Punchline.
Yeah, I love that place.
And the next day, the next morning, I was doing a live call-in to the show. And I was going, he's going to ask me if I'm gay. I know it. So I'm up all night. I'm a wreck. You know, he's going to ask me if I'm gay. And the next morning comes, and what does he do? He asks me if I'm gay.
Oh.
And I go, yeah! Yeah, I'm gay! Yeah, ho-ho! I'm gay! I'm the gayest! You know, and you know, just kind of
overboard, as if it's ridiculous,
crazy. And there was like, well, he's a nut. Okay, that's what he is. So I don't know if he's gay or not, but he's certainly crazy.
Yeah.
So I never really answered the question. I answered it, but I just answered it loud.
Why, you felt like if you said no, they would know you were lying,
or is this like, I don't know. I don't know. I probably said yes and then no. No, I'm not gay. You're gay. You know, I probably went back into my same thing, but I said yes and then no, and then who, you know, hi, ho, I'm gay. You're gay.
And so he didn't follow up on you at all?
No.
And how'd you feel that night? That
horrible.
Day?
You know, I was like, oh, God, well,
did I reveal too much?
Yeah. You know, they probably think, do you think they think I'm gay? And I would never talk about it to anybody, you know.
You know, people ask sometimes when they try to break down what somebody says, interview or something, and they go, well, why would he have said this in this language if he meant this? But you go, they've been asked 80 times. Yeah. This is just one of the answers they gave this way. It just like, it's not like you think out every word you're going to say every time you're asked a question.
Well, when you're trying to hide something,
yeah,
it's always on your mind, you know.
Yeah.
Always. So you're always afraid to come clean. You know, because you're going to say something that's going to be taken the wrong way, and then they're going to analyze it, and then... So I was always careful about what I said, you know?
Looking...
And then when, you know, like anybody would... You know, there was always other guys that, you notice that girl over there? Oh, yeah! Yeah! Oh! Wow! That is hot stuff.
I noticed somebody that works at the UFC like that, and when he sees other people looking at a hot chick, he'll go like overboard, like, oh yeah, you see that beautiful, beautiful lady?
Yeah. Wow, like, what an ass.
Yeah. Stop it, man.
That's a nice ass.
Stop it. Yeah.
So, you know, it was always so bad.
Yeah. Did you have like since before you came out, 43, is that what you said? 50?
No, I came out when I was 50.
50.
Yeah.
So in that time beforehand, were there any guys that you sort of regret not trying to work it out with?
Oh my God. I had so many crushes on so many guys, you know, from guys that, you know, I saw on television from when I was a young man to, you know, friends that I went to high school and college with, and then comedians I just had crushes on, you know.
Oh,
I said,
right.
Oh my God, I like him, he's cute, you know, or whatever, you know. But you know, you could never act on it, you know, ever. Yeah. So, you know, and then once you get on the pills, this brings you all those whole 16 years that I was on them.
Yeah.
From the time I was 40 until last year. Now it's I'm in my one year
anniversary.
First year of having this rebirth of no creativity. For 16 years.
Wait.
Oh, no. There's no...
The Paxil kills your creativity?
Oh, my God. There's nothing. There's just weight loss. There's weight gain. There's no... Your mind is completely fucking numb.
Oh, no.
Of anything that's... You could, you know... Anything could happen. And it's like, you could give a shit. You could give a shit. You never
just
cry.
Numbed.
You never... You have...
Not happiness?
You're just... You're just... There's really just an existence, you know, and you exist, and you have joy, you have your ups and downs, you still have depression, but you manage it better, and your wife or your, and then my partner at the time, and I had a wonderful boyfriend for 4 years up until a couple of years ago, and they would, my wife and him would both say, did you take your crazy pills? Did you take them? And I go, no, I didn't take them, you know. And then they go, you better take them. And then my daughter would.
You would go off for periods at a time and see.
In the morning, I would, you know, something would bother me or something, and they go, you take your crazy pills, and I go, no, I didn't take them, and I said, all right, I'll take them, you know, and I would take them, and I would never miss a day. Would always have, because the thing is, if you don't take them, what happens is you get these things called brain zaps. Okay,
explain that.
A brain zap. It's you can look it up in Wikipedia if you want. You can just Google it and say into your computer, just put right brain zaps and it will come up. And this is what the SSRI, the Paxils and all the antidepressants, what they do to you once you start weaning yourself off them.
Yeah.
You have these electrical charges that go off in your brain. Okay, so you just be sitting here without having them, and all of a sudden. And this like electrical charge will go off in your brain, and you'll be going, and you'll go, oh my God, what was that?
What?
And you know exactly what it is. It's because, oh my God, I forgot to take my.
And so it's just flooding with endorphins or something.
Your whatever brain or, whatever or, is happening,
flushing
this this thing that's happening to you is your brain is trying to reactivate. Your brain is trying to. You know,
weird.
You know, to breathe.
Were there emotions associated with it, or is it just the feeling of electricity?
Oh, yeah. There's tears. There's so much fucking emotion that you want to get off this stuff, you know? But you know that if you don't take the Paxil or the Prozac or the Zoloft or whatever you have, that you're going to have this electrical charge in your head. So you have to take it to stop that from happening. So you wean yourself off them. So it takes, you know, months to get off them, and then so you get these brain zaps, you know, and you're an emotional roller coaster.
Every day, what happened if you
walk? Oh, every day. Just, and so if you just go off them like today,
yeah.
So say if you are on
them. I haven't taken my pills today.
Okay, so you're on antidepressants.
Uh-huh.
How long have you been on them?
3-4 years.
Okay. And so,
I don't get those.
So if you ever go off them,
yeah.
What happens to you?
Well, one day my doctor's like, you'll be fine. You can go off 3 or 4 days. It's in your system. It's a different kind of like pill. It doesn't work that
so
way.
So it's not a Paxil or
it's the Cypramine, but he goes, you're fine.
Mine turned out to be paroxetine. It turned, you know, that my Paxil, and then it went to the generic, which was paroxetine.
Have you had any relapse since you went off it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would get, I suffer from depression. I have severe depression.
Me too.
And it's a battle every single day, you know, but I would rather live like this with it and have a voice and be able to express it opposed to masking it and, keeping a lid on it.
How did you, I mean, as a creative artist... How did you deal with 16 years of no creative flow? I can't imagine.
I could survive. I would get work. I would be able to memorize lines. I'd be able to, you know, go in and learn choreography. And I was in Hairspray. And that was 5 years of my life, basically.
This is pre-closet or post-closet?
No, the Hairspray was the... It's great because Hairspray is when I came out. It's a great part of the story because no matter how much Prozac and how much Zoloft and how much Paxil and paroxetine that you take to keep the gay down, Broadway
will
not stand for it, you know. Broadway will bring the gay out. I don't care how much Prozac you're on, you know. You go to Broadway and you just can't, you know. Does Broadway make you gay? Yes, it does. Broadway will make you gay. It will turn you. It will bring you out. Here I get to the Broadway stage, and
you did Hairspray on Broadway.
Yes,
man, that's pretty massive.
And I walk through that stage door. And the environment is just this place that I grew up in stand-up and television and did some commercials, voiceover work, and now I'm on Broadway, and everybody in the theater is a homo.
And
they're the greatest people in the world, and we're all down there, and we're laughing and loving each other, and I'm like, this is it! I love it! I'm going to tell my wife! I'm gay.
You told her first?
No, I didn't.
You told them.
It took me a while. It took me, you know, like it's like, you know, starting to, I go, you know, this is who I am.
And that's a nurturing effect. Whatever you got in high school and college, and people are like, oh, fuck the gays. Yeah. You must have gotten the opposite on Broadway.
Oh, now here I'm on Broadway, and now, you know, and everybody I'm with is gay, and some of them know. They just look at me and they go, oh, he's gay. He doesn't know it yet, but he is gay, 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 gay.
And they
gay.
Knew you didn't know it. They knew they could see closets.
Oh, yeah. And there was one guy that kind of took me aside, and he was probably the reason why I came out.
Who was this?
I'm not gonna mention who he is, but he's a dear, dear friend of mine. And there's another guy that I'm...
All right, it sounds like he saved you. Why would you not mention
that,
it?
That I'm meeting today for lunch, that he was writing a show about me, and I had a musical, I had somebody writing the music, and he was writing the book. And he's this great playwright now, and this is the first time I've because he goes, Kevin, he goes, you can come out. And it's you're, and he's like much, much
younger. He said that to you straight off? You can come out?
He mentioned this to me before I came out, before I would. He
goes, knew 100% you were gay, yes, and yes. So he can comment
goes,
on it.
Yeah. And he goes, I want to write this in the show. And I said, I'm not gay. Gregory, I'm not gay, okay?
Sweating.
And he goes, your daughter is going to be the coolest kid in school when everybody knows that her dad is gay. And I go, no, I'm not gay, Gregory, okay? I'm not gay. I'm not. And I'm having lunch with him for the first time in probably 6 years, you know?
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see him. I cannot wait to see him.
So you wouldn't tell him? You're like, no.
Well, he knew. And then what happened was once I got into this relationship with my partner of 4 years, and we've been broken up for 2 years now, you know, but it was a big part of my, you know, like I all of a sudden now I have this boyfriend that's 22 years younger than me and who is a matinee idol.
Fuck yeah, man. Congratulations.
But he is like the most gorgeous guy you've ever seen. But he was this guy that controlled every move that I made.
What do you mean?
He was, you know, like Brian Wilson, you know, from the Beach Boys. And, you know, like he had this guru that he couldn't, you know, he was like a psychiatrist or doctor that kind of controlled him. And it was kind of broke up the Beach Boys because he had to get all his, you know, he had to
advice
get
advice from that guy.
Advice from that guy before he made a move.
Oh, so this
and
boyfriend
that's the way
that?
That's the way my boyfriend ended up being. You know, I couldn't change the sheets without him going, why did you do that?
Sounds super healthy, man.
It wasn't, you know, yeah. But he was a wonderful guy up to a certain point, and then we started moving apart, you know, but I still was under his thumb.
Now, this is the first partner you had?
Yes.
First, like more than just one time?
Yeah, yeah. This was my boyfriend, you know.
Did you have any sexual growing to do? Because it seems like you'd be so stunted.
Because soon after I came out, he came into my life, and then he... Pretty
he
much,
must have been the worst lay.
He told me everything about what I should be and how I should be and how I should grow and about my comedy and about my show that I was doing with Gregory and the whole Damien and the whole cast of characters that were involved in my show. And he goes, this is a piece of shit, this show. You know, that he's doing. I don't like the show. He goes, this is never going to go anywhere. And he was a theater guy.
Yeah.
So now my boyfriend is telling me that this show that I'm working on with these creative people is a piece of shit. And it's no good.
So what'd you do?
So I called him one day. I said, I'm not a part of it anymore. I don't want to do it.
Because you believed him so much.
Oh, my God, yeah. So well, I just like threw them to the curb. Just like that.
Was it kind of like Stockholm Syndrome? Where
they were like... Excuse me, we've been working on this for, you don't want to do it anymore? I go, no, I don't want to do it anymore. I don't want to be a part of it.
Because you believed your boyfriend.
Oh my God, yes, absolutely. Wow. Absolutely. So I, whatever he said, I was on board with. So, and when I look back at it now, it's like, I go, I was such a coward. I was such a coward that I couldn't stand up to myself and say, no, I want to go through it with these guys. I want to do it. I want to do it. This is what I want to do.
So it wouldn't be your responsibility.
And so I just let him, you know, like control me. And this was also part of the drug that I was on. I didn't want to confront anything. So it was part of,
because of the Paxil.
Even though I was trying to be creative, yeah. I had no fucking backbone. I couldn't stand up to anybody. I couldn't stand, you know, whatever anybody said, I said, okay, that's great. That's fine. That's fine. Because I couldn't give a shit. I took my crazy pills.
You just didn't care.
You know?
That's kind of pill.
it was like, and there's no exit strategy. You can't get off them. As I told you, you get the brain zapped.
It's not like, I'll do this for 3 weeks, like antibiotics, then you'll be fine again.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it just ended up being, you know, this, so I'm really looking forward to seeing Gregory this afternoon for lunch.
First time since then.
Yeah.
You're going to say sorry.
And I can't... Yeah, absolutely I'm going to say I'm sorry. And I'm going to explain to him. And we're Facebook friends and we talk and I know what he's doing and he's been really successful and I'm really proud of him. And I remember having a crush on him when I first came out and, you know, he was just this wonderful young man that I was like, oh my God, you know, I mean... And he was so supportive of me and then... you know, we were doing the show together, and I was, you know, there were part of me that didn't like it, part of me did like it. Somebody was writing about me, you know.
Yeah. And he wrote the show about you and your life.
Yeah, and I was like, nope, I don't want to do it anymore.
Oh, that's not like they can do it with anybody else.
So, and I remember, I don't even have it. I threw it out. Got rid of it. Just get rid of it. I don't want it anymore. You know, and all these things that I had in my life that he said, what are you carrying around all this stuff for? You know, and I was like, you know, you're right. You know, I'm going to get rid of it all.
No matter what he said.
Yeah, no matter what he said.
When you, so was this your first boyfriend when you came out?
Yeah.
How soon did you start with him?
6 months after I came out.
Was it just a fuckathon after you came out? Or were you like, no, I got to find a boy?
Yeah, it was. It was like, you know, like once I came out, I was combing the internet, you know, and asking people in Hairspray to come home with me.
Really?
Yeah. Why don't you come home with me tonight?
Did you get a lot?
You know, somewhat, you know, here and there, you know. There were a couple of guys, you know, from Hairspray that I, you know, I hooked up with and we had fun. It was just, you know, best friends, you know, friends with benefits type thing.
The gay community has that down.
Then he came along and then all that stopped. And now all of a sudden I'm in this relationship, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
And he's gorgeous. And my ex-wife likes him.
Oh, really?
Oh, well, I gotta talk to you about that. She's so smart and so wonderful and so above me intellectually just to process stuff, okay? She's kind of like a Bill Clinton intellect, okay, if I can put like a Hillary intellect. I don't want to make it a man thing, but she can multitask. She can separate her feelings of
compartmentalization,
the love that she had for me. And then transfer to say, okay, Kevin is now with this man. This man is really good to Kate. And Kevin was a part of my life.
Being mean to this man isn't going to help me. Like, from her point of view, being mean to that boyfriend isn't going to help her and her goals in any way. So it's like.
So she embraced it. And she was always the one with the olive branch out. Always. Even though she was so incredibly hurt.
Was she?
Oh, my God, yeah.
How long were you with her?
Well, it was probably, you know, probably 13 or 14 years total since when we'd first met until the time that we divorced, you know. So it was a 10-year marriage, and it was like, you know, like a few years before that we had gone out, then we had broken up, I had gotten married, blah, 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 in Vegas, you know, so it was like a...
How did you tell her? How scared were you before you did?
The thing was, I had told everybody else first, and I had...
Because you were frightened?
I was totally frightened, and I had a psychiatrist, and I'd go to her, a friend of mine in at Hairspray, Julie Halston, which is she's a great actress.
I feel like I've heard of her name.
Comedic. She writes monologues. She does monologues. She's a storyteller. She's just this wonderful, wonderful lady who just I love. And I told her, and she's so dramatic. So what are you going to do? We have to do this, you know. And so she got me to, you know, to Marge. And Marge helped me through this transition, you know. So
who's Marge?
Marge was my therapist, my psychiatrist, you know. She was a therapist up on the Upper West Side. So I talked to her, and I started telling people in the cast. Started telling people in my family. Started telling
Whoa. Who'd you tell in your family?
Told my sister first. Right? My oldest sister. And the first thing she said is, don't tell mom and dad.
Really?
Don't tell them. They don't deserve this. Don't tell them that. They don't want to know. Okay? Mm. Don't tell anybody. Don't tell them. It's going to hurt them. And I was like, really? You know? And then I told my other brother, Tim, he started crying.
Crying?
Yeah.
Out of love,
more than anything, you know. And then there was this is what my mother told me, you know, and my mother and father, they were when I
you
told
them,
they were like, "We're so happy for you." My father goes, "Well, are you going to have a party, like a coming out party?"
You should have.
And I was like, they were so wonderful about it. It was like we should have told you a long time ago.
They said that to you.
Pretty
they
much.
Knew. They knew.
They, you know, my mom knew, you know.
How do you tell your son, though, hey, I think you're gay.
My professor at college knew, and he would always tell me from the time I was 18, He goes, I know you're gay. And I go, I am not gay. And his name was H. We called him H. I go, H, I'm not gay, okay? I'm not a, and it was back then, I'm not a homo. I'm not queer. All right? I'm not. I'm not a faggot.
Oh.
All right? And that's just, the, that was in the 70s.
Would you ever gay bash? Not physically, but would you ever yell, like, look at that faggot on the screen?
I would be, I would join in with them. I'd never hurt anybody.
Okay.
I was always on the right side of...
You were, like, undercover. You wouldn't...
Yeah, I mean, I would never, but I would... I don't think I would get on the bandwagon, but I wouldn't be preachy or anything, you know? I'd kind of hold back, and I'm not it was so scary, because then all of a sudden, AIDS came in, you know?
And
AIDS came, and I was right on top of that. I would guess, where was I in 1980? Where was I?
Where were you?
San Francisco.
Oh.
That's where I started off.
The epicenter.
And that's where the first mention of it in the Chronicle, I was right on top of it going, oh, my God. And I had
now
a
I definitely can't come out. Yeah, there's a disease associated with it now.
Because if you're gay, you have AIDS.
This.
Yeah. And it got, every day it got worse.
Do you remember what they called it in the beginning?
The gay cancer.
GRIDS.
You know?
Gay-related immune deficiency syndrome. Yeah.
Well, it was like the gay cancer.
Yeah,
they
it only affects the gays. It only affects gays. You can't kiss people. You can't shake them in the hand.
Yeah, spitting, sweat.
Yeah, if they're talking to you, gym, if a piece of spit comes out and touches near your nose or mouth, it's it. You have AIDS.
But then you would see, like, Lady Di, and she would hug the AIDS patients, and she would...
I remember that. Are you crazy? Are you crazy?
And then there were, you know, and then, like, Rock Hudson, and, you know, like, he put the face of it. He put, you know, like... And then, you know, he was gay. You know, like people talked about it, but
Liberace they knew, but our cousin was like, "Whoa!" I remember being like,
"It was kind of fourth or fifth grade." Of a, you know, but everybody in Hollywood knew.
Yeah,
he was
there,
gay,
sure.
You know,
man.
So it's just a it's a.
How much of a relief was it when you started telling people? Like, how liberating was it for you?
It was such a relief, and but I didn't realize how much pain I had caused. Marianne, you know, it was such I was so happy and so relieved and kind of just threw her to the side. You know, I didn't, it was like, it's about me. I'm out. And I was like, when I came out, who did I call? Joy Behar, Joy and Susie. And
why?
Because they're friends of mine and they were at the wedding. They were at our wedding.
So you said, hey,
and Marianne's like, don't tell Joy. I go, I'm telling everybody, Marianne. I'm telling everybody.
You weren't concerned with what it does to her, that she's married to a gay guy
for
13 years.
Yeah, was not concerned with her.
Wow.
You know, it was all about me. And it was...
What did she do when you told her?
Oh, my God, it was... Well, I didn't tell her. You know, she found out. So I had left something up on the computer screen. You know, we had moved into this big house from... we had moved from California to Toluca Lake to... New York, and we bought this big mansion in Tarrytown, and there was like a 4,000 square feet of living space, you know, looking over the Hudson River.
Nice.
It was part of the Singer Sewing Machine Estate, you know, and that was their carriage house. Their mansion was right next door.
I love how their carriage house was your mansion.
That was our, you know, and originally when it was built, it was the Singer Sewing Machine Mansion and the carriage house, and it was all the land. It was right next to the Rockefeller Estate.
Yeah.
You know, which is still intact. And this little estate was broken up, and the mansion sits alone, and the carriage house was turned into a beautiful home. And we had purchased it, and we could see the Hudson River. And downstairs was my office and my studio that I had built, you know. And basically, I kind of lived separately down there. And,
Pre-coming out?
Yeah. So she lived upstairs, and Kate had her, you know, she had her own wing, and Marianne had her own wing, and we had the public rooms.
How often did you have sex at this time?
Well, it was very rare, you know.
A couple times a year?
Yeah, it got less and less, you know, as the years would go on. You
like
know?
Any marriage almost, though.
Yeah. Like any relationship, really,
yeah.
You know. You know, if when once the spark leaves the relationship.
Too much the sameness. You need some variety in there.
So I was down there, and I had my office down there. And I had, you know, I had designed it. I had knocked down walls, and I had made this beautiful little apartment studio down below. I had my own entrance,
uh-huh.
And I would come up and I would make breakfast for Kate and get Marianne and Kate off to work and school, and then I would go downstairs and before I would go to the theater, I would, you know, do my little emails, maybe look online for something. Left something up online. And she came back, and she saw it. She said, what is this on Craigslist? Men seeking men, you know? And I said, I'm gay. And she was just like, what? And I said, that's... I'm gay. Wow. And she didn't know what to say, you know? And then...
Did she say, no, you're not? Did
no, you? No. She never denied it. And then it was like this relief. She was like, I'm so glad it's not another woman.
Oh.
And it was this relief.
Because it's not a betrayal. Then, it's just who you are.
And then it became this pissing match. Because she comes from... We both come from a Catholic background. Okay. Her parents are probably more super Catholic than my parents were. You know... They were Eucharistic ministers. They still are. You know, they're always at the church. They're a part of the church. The church is a big part of their life. Although they're Catholics in a way where I'm a Catholic in that way, where I believe a lot of the things that the Catholics teach, but there's other things I don't agree with them, you know?
Yeah.
So they're good people, you know, but they...
Who?
My in-laws. They're good people. And I love them very much, but they're the ones who influenced Marianne and said, well, you know, he can't have joint custody of Kate because of his lifestyle.
He's
going to
evil them up. He's going to evil Kate up.
Right. So they wanted, so Marianne sought
full custody.
Full custody.
Oh,
because
no.
of my lifestyle change. And I go, no, that's not going to happen. I want joint custody. And that's when the fight began. So we spent probably $100,000 each on this divorce to, you know, get through it. And it was just like, and in the end, I got, we got joint custody. Marianne gets to pull the plug if Kate's in a car accident, you know, and,
right.
she gets to make all the decisions about her school, which I said, fine, you can do that, you know. So it was, it's
well, the most important thing is that you get to see your daughter.
I get to see my daughter without supervision.
Yeah.
Without, you know, restrictions or anything like that. She has to get permission from me when she takes her out of the country. I have to get permission from her when I take her out of the country or I travel with her. It's the same deal on both ends, you know. Now we have this wonderful relationship.
How long did that last for, the bitterness, the anger?
It lasted, it progressively got better. Like as, I remember the first Christmas, because it happened the Christmas before that, you know, she found out.
Right around Christmas?
Right around Christmas. And then the following Christmas, I remember going up to the house and giving her a gift and making her laugh. And she said, that's the first time I laughed since, you know, we broke up. And it was like, oh, my God, you know, because I could always make her laugh, you know.
There's nothing worse a girl can do that you're really into
other
than stop laughing at your jokes.
Yes.
That's
right.
The worst pain you can give a comic.
Oh, my God. So, but that was our relationship. There was always, no matter how down she was, and no matter how painful, no matter what happened was happening in her life, the pain that she had, you know, because she suffers from depression also. So no matter how low she was, I could always bring her out of it. And I could make her laugh, and then we'd laugh about it, and then we'd it would be great. You know, that was my passion. You know, it was like... Her and I, we'd always on the phone, you know, always on the phone, constantly all day, 10, 12 times a day. Then you'd rip that away from both of us, you know, there's nothing. Then it gradually starts coming back, you know. And then after my dad passed away.
Yeah.
Now, this is like 3 years into it, you know.
Okay.
Into, you know, we're not together anymore, you know.
Did you immediately, as soon as she found out you were gay, as soon as you had that talk, was it like, we should break up now? Or was it like, was there
no,
any period
it was,
we should continue?
I remember coming home from the theater, and I would give her a kiss on, you know, I'd kiss her goodnight, and she'd be in bed. And I remember still sleeping in the same bed, you know. And
afterwards.
Afterwards, you know, and then, you know, then slowly moving downstairs. And then starting to drink a lot, like really starting to, you know, start pounding them, you know, to cover up whatever, you know, like there was all this shit going around. I mean, just way too much booze, you know, And but then getting up the next day, getting back to the theater, you know, and then just, you know,
you'd booze by yourself.
Yeah, ugh. Sure. You know, ugh. Drinking that is alone.
The
you know?
Sign of
oh,
trouble.
Oh no, terrible. Absolutely. Listen, I'm not proud of it, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
You know, but it was something I did, and it was something that's not totally not healthy, you know. But yeah. I was in a lot of pain, and that kind of put the fire out, and then I would do it all again the next day, and then slowly the lawyer would say, because I had gotten my lawyer, you know, I had set everything up. And then when she found out, she was like, "You already have a lawyer.
Oh, you already have."
Yeah,
that seems like more of a betrayal.
You've already been to therapy.
What have you done behind my back?
You know, and all this. So it was a total betrayal. Yeah. And then the lawyers started pissing at each other. And then you call the lawyer and you tell the lawyer, you know what she did? Let me tell you what she did. And I've got these emails right here. How about this? Look at these emails.
And they're just counting that
and
money.
They're just counting the money going, oh, my God, we can get her on contempt. And
she should
and
then, not then, have then done she's, that.
And no. Then she is getting, she's sending her lawyer emails that I wrote to her. And then, next thing you know, I'm getting a restraining order against me. And, you know, and it just gets way out of hand.
Yeah.
But the great thing is we're past that now.
Okay, that's great.
And we have a wonderful relationship where we're raising our daughter together, and we're both totally honest with each other. We can all go out together for dinner. We go out to things with Kate. I hang out with her parents.
So are you just good friends with her now, Marianne?
I think it's more than friends. I mean, we're a couple. We're partners in our child's life, you know, and we love each other dearly, but we're divorced because I'm gay.
Because you need cock in your life and not vagina.
Well, you put that any way you want, but that's because I'm gay, we're divorced, okay? Do I love her? Absolutely. Does she love me? Absolutely. Do we love our daughter? More than anything. So...
But extenuating circumstances won't let you have a normal style relationship.
I don't think it, you know, I will always be in each other's life.
Yeah.
You know?
That's nice. I like that.
And it's bittersweet.
What do you mean?
Because, you know, part of me would love to have, you know, that relationship with her again, you know, where we're together as one.
Mm-hmm. More intimate.
And then another, not an intimate relationship at all. That's not
emotionally
that's,
intimate.
Emotionally.
No.
Yeah. Emotionally, she'll always be there for me emotionally. And I'll always be there for her emotionally, you know. But will it go to another level at some point? It probably will, you know. Not intimacy. We're really good now.
Did you get jealous when she started dating?
She has never... gone, you know, I don't know about her, but the one thing is I would never get jealous with that, because that's not who I see her as now. It's not a I would love more than anything if she would find somebody that she could spend the rest of her life with and would be able, the two of them could be happy, you know. I would love that more than anything.
How'd you explain?
Because I always knew that we'll have our relationship, mm-hmm. You know,
regardless. And yeah. So it's like, this will make you happy. I want you to do that.
Yeah.
How'd you explain it to Kate?
It was simple, you know.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, it's so weird. I mean, she's like,
she was seven.
She was seven.
Okay.
And way beyond her years, you know. And one of the great parts of coming out and being in Hairspray and on Broadway and having this support cast behind you.
Life in the Closet, yeah.
You know, when they set up when I have Kate and when she has Kate, and, you know, she's going to be with Kate Monday through Friday, or I'm going to have Kate Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Okay.
And because it works with my schedule for Broadway. And
Sunday,
I have only a matinee, and I will bring Kate to the matinee with me,
mm-hmm.
And I'll pick her up in the morning. We'll go to the matinee, and she'll stay with me at the matinee. Then I'll take her home. And Kate's and Marianne's lawyer says, no, she the girl can't go to a theater with her father and spend the day in the theater, in the dirty old dusty theater.
What?
And stay there with her father, and she's only seven, and there's people walking around naked, and, and they're changing and all that. It's not a good place for a child.
Yeah.
It's dangerous backstage. Anything could happen, you know, and who knows what's there, you know. So we go in front of the judge, and the judge goes, I think that's the perfect place for a child. Backstage with the grease paint and the actors. And you knew that this judge wanted to be an actor at one time. You knew it. You just could see the fire in her eyes that she wanted to be with her father backstage, putting on makeup and building sets and going out and, you know, hearing your cue line. You know, so that was the only victory I had through the whole divorce, that I could bring Kate to the theater every Sunday. And Kate loved it, and she just embraced it, you know, and she would, and my boyfriend was in the cast with me, and she would hang out with him and all the boys in the locker room, and she would go to the, and sometimes one of the covers, you know, they have understudies that would be, you know, that weren't on that day.
It's a family, isn't it?
It's a family. Theater. And they would go, oh, I'll watch Kate for you. You know, she can stay in my dressing room. And they would hang out and play cards or just like, you know, go out into the audience and, you know. And
Kinison was like this. My acting teacher in L.A., Bill Howie, he was friends with Kinison, you know, at the height of it. And when they would bring their kid, Steve Howie, who was like a three-year-old. Kinison would go to the bartender, not the bartenders, the guards, whatever they're called. And he'd be like, hey, these are my straight friends.
Yeah.
Meaning like non-drug addicts. Like, make sure this kid does not see anything that's happening in here.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll just be okay on the side.
Yeah.
You know, in another room. Yeah, but theater's okay for people.
Yeah, that's no, cool. It was great. So there were like mini victories and the building of this relationship with, you know, like once you get divorced and once it's on track and you're never this person that you had this child with is, you have to accept that you're dealing with her for the rest of your life as long as this kid is alive.
Yeah.
You know, because you two are in it together, you know, and you better, you know. And that was what she always saw, that she saw.
Who's she?
Marianne. Okay. She always saw
bigger picture.
A bigger picture, you know, like
I asked Dice once, he got divorced, and I was like, do you ever like talk shit about your ex in front of the kids? He was like, why would I take away their mother figure? He goes, absolutely not.
Yeah.
That'll do me good, but it'll do the kids pain. Like, that's a terrible idea.
Yeah, well, there are people that do that.
I know, but it's not good thought process.
No, it's not. But you see it done every single day, and you see parents picking up their kids at school. Like, the mother will pick them up one time, the father will come up the other time. They can't be in the same room together. Mm-hmm. They can't have meetings together. When he goes over to pick so-and-so up at the house, he stays in the lobby or doesn't go to the door
because he can't
stand her. And it's the same thing, you know, on her end, you know. So
hatred could so easily just own you.
And like 2 years ago, you were in love with each other so much and you got married and you had this beautiful child. And now you're saying fuck you to each other constantly and you can't get over that pain, whatever that pain is.
Does she ever now, Kate, does she ever like throw it in your face to like, because she's that bratty teenager?
Well, she's like, you know, I do a thing in my act now. It's like, oh, daddy, I can't take it. You're gay. Mommy's gay. I go, mommy's not gay. Well, she acts gay. God. You're all gay.
I love hearing this. It's going to make me never have a kid. I love hearing stuff like this.
Oh, but like, you know, she was so great. And then, you know, all of a sudden, it's just like, you know, this angst that she has. It's
teenage,
like,
man. They're awful. They're awful. They're so entitled. They think they're so smart. Fuck you, kids.
Yeah.
All of them.
Oh, I don't give her. I mean, the thing that she knows is that I've told her, I said, listen, you can be as dramatic as you want to be.
You're not going to out-dramatize you.
I am more dramatic. I will always be more dramatic than you. Okay? I'm a bigger drama queen than you, and I will always be.
I'm trained at this. I'm a professional.
I don't care
drama
how
queen.
Crazy you get. I'm worse. I will throw a bigger tantrum. So don't you ever go there with me, because I am bigger and better and always will be better than you.
That's funny.
In that department.
Let me ask you one question. How do I've known gay guys, closeted gay guys that won't come out.
Yeah.
And I always thought, like, don't people tell them they face it? And I know they do. But how do you fuck a woman? Logistically, thought process?
Well,
like,
you know,
do you get hard? Like, what? Seriously, like, how does it?
Well, it's natural. I mean, it's like, it was always involved alcohol.
Okay.
You know, there was always, you know, that part of it. So,
And then would you think about dudes? Or?
No, I mean, I guess you could say that I was bi in a way, you know, because sure. I could, you know, have sex and I could enjoy it.
I believe in the Kinsey scale.
But there was always, that wasn't enough. I didn't want that. I wanted the guy.
Would it be like hooking up with somebody really ugly when you're like, I could do it, but I'd rather do this?
Or, listen, like, I loved my wife. I did.
Yeah.
I loved her. I wanted to have a baby. I'm the reason why we had the baby.
What do you mean? Talking her into it?
Well, you know, like when she was trying to get pregnant, you know, like we would go to the, you know, and this is what the doctor said. Okay, you know, when you're done having sex, make sure her legs go up in the air.
So you would, you know, do that?
So that semen, bicycle. It's all gravity. It's got to go down. It's got to get in there. So I would say, okay, all right, lift the legs up. Come on. That semen's got to get in. It was like so clinical.
Like in Lebowski, when she's doing that, and he's like, oh, I don't want, that's not.
Yeah. It's like all. So I knew this is what I wanted, you know, And then with the...
Was a kid going to save you? Because you still had the kid when you were super in there, closeted.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that going to say... Was it a situation where it's like, if I have a kid, no one will say I'm gay?
Well, yeah, that was part of it. It was like, you know, that's definitely... I wanted to be in love. I wanted the life that everybody else had, and I was like, why can't I have it? And I just couldn't be honest with myself. And there was always something in the back of my head saying, you know, when I get older, maybe I'll be able to come out. Right. And then I never thought of it. And then once
and one
I
day you're walked, 40, one day you're 45, one day you're 50, and you're like, when is this going to happen?
Once I walked through that stage door, it just, I was like, I can't hold it back anymore. I cannot hold it back.
Get that pussy off your face.
I couldn't.
Big J's been saying that the last 2 days. He's been quoting you on that.
I could not get over it. It was like just something that I knew I had to do it. And then the obstacles to get to that place.
But how did you? Like,
because
how did
you have, listen, I have $1 million house.
Yeah.
I have.
The rest of your life is worked out. It's going really well.
It's not, our marriage is breaking up anyway. You know, there are other factors in the marriage that are, you know, ruining the marriage, you know.
Oh, right.
There are things that, you know,
it wouldn't just
she's
be
not happy, I'm not happy. You know, we're fighting, we're arguing, we're kind of living apart. I'm in the basement, I'm in my office complex downstairs, she's upstairs in the rest of the house.
That's not a picket fence.
It's not a picket fence. Her parents aren't happy with me. I'll just say this one little antidote here. We're living at the house, big snowstorm one day, and the mother-in-law calls me, what's going on? Is everything all right at the house? I go, yeah, everything's great. I said, I'm outside shoveling the driveway. We have a big snowstorm, you know, shoveling the driveway. They're in Florida, so I'm shoveling up here. Oh, that's wonderful. That's very good cardiovascular. Very good cardiovascular. And they kind of patterned themselves after the Kennedys. I know it sounds a little Kennedy-ish.
Because you were from Boston?
But that's,
they were?
No, they're not. This is just the way they spoke. This is the way they do speak.
Yeah.
And then my mother calls me right after that. And she goes, what are you doing? I said, I'm shoveling the driveway. You're going to have a heart attack.
What a difference.
So it's like, you know, they want me dead, and my mother wants me alive. You know? And although they...
Oh, yeah, that's getting in the way of the relationship, too. All that shit.
And we had been to therapy, right? And the therapist had said to me and Marianne that... Marianne's parents want you out of the picture. Do you know that, Kevin? They want you out of the picture. Oh. They want to raise the kid. Marianne and them, and you're out of the picture. They don't want you here anymore. Don't you understand that? And I was like, you know, yeah, I guess I understand that, you know.
Oh, fuck.
And then I remember she going, do you mind if we record this? And I go, yeah, you're not recording this.
Yeah.
And they go, well, why is it? And then Marion goes, why don't you want it recorded? I said, I don't want to record it. I haven't
this
gets
out.
What do you
mean, why stuff recorded of me?
You know, I don't want this, record. I don't want a bad set recorded, you know. Yeah. I don't want anything, if it's good, you know.
Yeah.
So there were always these obstacles, to get through. And then we're finally, but I just have to say now it's good. You're always trying to improve your life. You know, every day is something. Oh my God, I gotta go.
Yeah,
yeah,
dude, this is really great. I know. I'm sorry I kept you long.
Yeah.
Do other comics come up to you for advice now, or for like gay comics that are closeted?
No, because I don't put myself in this gay comic thing. I'm not a gay comic.
But you're honest on stage, and that when that comes up. It's like, oh, here's a guy who did it. Yeah. Very well did it.
Oh, what are you, crazy?
No, I have sponsors.
No, no, no,
it goes towards that.
No.
Really?
No. I'm not taking money for this.
All right.
Good.
Well, thanks, man.
All right.
Can people find you online or anything?
Twitter. I want to build my Twitter.
Okay.
And Kevin Meaney. Meaney.
Okay. Thanks, man.
That's it. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
That was the best.
Thank you. I liked it.
I did too. Yeah, I liked it a lot. Yeah, thanks, man. I never meant to hurt you. I never meant to make you cry. But tonight, I'm cleaning out my closet. I said, I'm sorry, mama. I never meant to hurt you. I never meant to make you cry. But tonight, I'm cleaning out my closet. Now, I would never diss my own. That's so fucking good. Oh, Sugar Rush. Oh my God. Wow. Kit Kat chunky peanut butter. Oh. Fuck. Oh, wow. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the episode. 147. In the books. Closet Case with Kevin Meaney. Thank you, Kevin Meaney. He asked me to ask everyone to follow him on Twitter. He's going to make a solid push to get on Twitter, he said. Me and Jay have been talking. Jay Okers has been talking about Kevin Meaney all day for the last, 2 weeks. Keeps, quoting his lines. He's got a Kevin Meaney rush. Get that pussy off your face. Wipe that pussy off your face. How can you listen to Kevin Meaney? How can you listen to that guy and not think he's gay? How deep did he have to bury that? That was so funny. It was just so funny. Imagining him going, how dare you? I am not gay. How dare you? Yeah, I can't imagine. They must have been like, what are you talking about, man? We clearly know. Everybody clearly knows. Anyway, you guys, that's the episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget, New Year's Eve in Toronto at the Royal Theater, 8 p.m. Get tickets. Me and Kurt Metzger and Rob Mayhew are all doing a show. Get tickets. It'll be fun. They're not gouging everybody. $27.50. And then... coming up in the next couple months, I'm in Denver. I might record a CD there. I might. Buffalo at Helium. Denver, the Comedy Works. Buffalo at Helium. Chicago at Zany's. And Riot LA. I'm doing a storyteller show. This is not happening. In LA, January 10th, I think. Good lineup. It's a good lineup. I think we're doing drugs as a topic. So check out Riot LA for details. And... that's it. Go to AriTheGreat.com for extra details on all the episodes. There was something I wanted to say. It was something about if you're going to be with your families, you should tell them something. Not to listen to this podcast, but you should do that. That would help me out, get more listeners. Tell some friends. Let this thing grow a little bit. There was something else I was going to say to do with your families concerning this. Maybe eat some... fucking Mr. Big or some emu jerky that I got in Australia. What the fuck was I gonna say? It was something about, was it about being gay? No, I wasn't. Everyone come out of the closet while you're with your families. It wasn't about resisting the government this year, having a discussion about how they're taking power away from us left and right and doing nothing about it. The NSA shit, by the way, they ain't gonna do shit. They're not gonna change anything. They're just gonna give them more power, and now we're just gonna know.
When people say they hide it for our own protection, it means so we won't be upset that they're just going to do it anyway. That's what they're protecting us from. They're protecting us from being annoyed at what they're going to do regardless. There's nothing we can do about it peacefully. Man, what was I going to say about something you should do with your families? This holiday season, when you're around them. What was it? If you have any last-minute gifts, go to my Amazon link on my website, arithegreat.com. Go there and click on the Amazon link, and it takes you to Amazon, and then whatever you buy, if you do that, then that just they pay me so I can keep practicing getting better at stand-up. What the fuck was I going to say? About when you're with your family, you should tell them something or say something. I don't know. Appreciate them? Nah. That's ridiculous. I wouldn't say that. Maybe if I have another bite of this Kit Kat crunchy peanut butter. That might help. Oh, my God. I know. It did remind me. My storyteller show. This is not happening. We're taking 2 weeks off online. So we're not going to have one Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve. But so while you're with your family, tell them about it and play your favorite ones for them. The last one with Joey Diaz 2 times ago. Keknes was last week. It was all right. But the one with Joey Diaz was great. If you don't know how to find it, just go to YouTube and on the search bar, type in This Is Not Happening playlist. And the first one that comes up, the Comedy Central one that comes up, just they're all right there. So click on Joey Diaz's. Here are the big ones that I like. If you want to, but share them with like your dads. People's dads watch them. So you can watch them with your like your parents. They're just fun stories. They're so personal that even if they're filthy or about drugs or something, adults still appreciate it. So just like enjoy it with your friends and your brothers. Here's the ones I like the most, like the ones that stood out to me. Joey Diaz is the last one. Before that, Kurt Braunholer's, Rogan's. Oh, Jay Ogerson's was great. Mine from this year I liked. My first one. And then last season, Tom Segura's was really good. Sean Patton's. TJ Miller, that was the first one that we aired, and that one was great. My first one I liked. Julia Lillis, I liked hers. And John Huck. The John Huck story was just fucking tremendous. That's the last one. So yeah, watch all those while you're home with everybody. This just go after one after another. Just watch those in any order. And then tweet the guys that after they do it because they like hearing about it. Sean Patton loves hearing about it. He says he got more heat off that than his half hour special. Comics like feedback, you guys. We're so petty and we're not, none of us are really famous. So just like tweet us and it makes us feel better. Tweet Kevin Meaney. Let him know that something you're going to do to come out of the closet in your life. You know, like you're going to tell people you're illiterate. Finally, time to tell them you don't know how to read or write or whatever it is. All right, you guys, that's it. Ladies and gentlemen, Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, episode 147, Closet Case, has come to a close. I wish you all Merry Holiday. Have a good break. I'll be in Vegas for the fucking Anderson Silva, Vanderlei Silva. I'm sorry, Anderson Silva, Chris Weidman fight. So goddamn excited. Me, Joe Rogan, Joey Diaz, and Brian Callen are doing a show at the Mirage on the 27th. It's going to be massive. What a great fucking show that'll be. What a great goddamn show that'll be. And then the fight's the next day. I am looking forward to that fight. Then the Ronda Rousey fight, too. That'll be all right. But, man, I'm ready for Anderson and Ken Weidman. Anderson, I hope we focus. And if he's focused, it's done. Weidman has no chance. Redemption! Redemption! The place is going to go crazy. It's going to go nuts. Norton's going to be there, I think. I heard that, too. Watching the fights. God, I can't wait. I hope I get the good seat. I'm going to try to get the director to let me up there by Rogan so I can be there. No matter how gacked I am, I am on a fucking pot cookie. I want to be right up there. Woo! Getting excited just thinking about it. All right, you guys, that's it. Episode 147, Closet Case, in the books. Talk to you later. And I see your true colors shining through. I see your true colors.
up and you call me up, because you know I'll be there. And I see your true colors shining through. I see your true colors. That's why I love you. So don't be afraid to let it show. Show your truth.